Today we're going to talk about something that, to some degree or another, is a universal human experience. It's something we all have been through or are going to go through. And Jesus is going to talk to us about it in kind of a weird way. And that will be a lot of fun. So I hope that you will enjoy this as much as I have as I've worked on it. So we're in Luke 18, and I will start in verse 2. Today, Luke 18, verse 2. So this is a parable. Jesus is going to tell a story, and it is an odd one, to say the least. So he, this is Jesus, said, "In a certain city, there was a judge who neither feared God nor respected man. And there was a widow in that city who kept coming to him, saying, 'Give me justice against my adversary.' For a while, he refused." Let's stop there. So there's a widow. Now, a widow in Jesus' day was the epitome of somebody in severe hardship. And this widow in particular more than likely had no husband, obviously. Yes, I went to school for this. She had no uncle, no nephew, no brother, no son old enough to take her case. Because if she had any of those people, they would have gone to court for her. A woman in this day had no voice in front of a judge. So the fact that she's there tells us that this person's got nobody to support her. She is completely alone. Culturally, she is the epitome of somebody that's powerless and helpless, ultra vulnerable in every way. So she's in a dire, dire, dire strait. Now compare her to the judge. How did Jesus summarize the judge? He said, he neither fears God nor respects man. So this judge is the antithesis of the great commandment. He doesn't love God, and he doesn't care for or love people. Not the kind of person you'd want to go appear before, right? So he felt no compassion for the needs of other people. He was corrupt and only interested in himself. No sense of honor, dignity, or humanity. And when you take somebody like that and you combine it with power, then you're going to have problems. You're going to have casualties. You're going to have mess. You're going to have hurt people. And that's what took place with this woman. So, as best you can tell from the little bit we just read, what's the situation? What's the conflict in the story? Every story is built around conflict. What's the conflict? What do you think? Okay, so she's got an adversary, but really she's got two. Okay, so what's the conflict itself? What do you think?
Her only hope is no hope.
Okay, so her only hope was the judge, and the judge was not any help to her. He kept continually brushing her off, saying, "I won't hear you. I don't want to have anything to do with you. Your case is not valid," whatever he would have said. So at the core, what's happening here is there's a powerful judge who's abusing his authority, and he's not executing the law fairly. He's not doing the very thing he's supposed to do. And on the other hand, we have a poor widow who has no other hope, and she willingly endures the repeated humiliation of a judge, throwing her off. So whatever her need was, it must have been great. And we're not told exactly what that was. More than likely, if we were to fill in the details, and Jesus would have said more, he probably would have told us something like this. The husband died, and he left a small piece of land to his wife and little kids. And this piece of land was the only thing that the woman had to live off of, and the only thing she had to live on. So this was a vital, vital, vital thing to her. Somebody came along the way after the husband died and took advantage of her and took the land away. And so now she's left with literally nothing. Her only recourse is to go herself before a judge. And to make things worse, this judge won't stand up for her. So she literally goes day after day after day after day after day, pleading her case. It's the powerful abusing the powerless. Now, she needed what? She needed justice. Now, there's a loaded word, isn't it? So when you hear that word, what's the first thing you think of? I'm really curious. Justice, what do you think of? You're shy today. Paradise? What? Fairness. I'm like, what? Okay, fairness. What else? What do you think of? Punishment? Death? What else? Superman? Nobody's saying George W. Bush here, and I'm very shocked by that. I'm going to bring him to justice. Remember this? No? All right. What? I'm on my own. Okay, I guess you guys don't realize we're supposed to be in the world, but not of the world. All right, so that did not go well. So what does justice actually mean? Justice is to defend one's cause. To seek justice is to defend one's cause. It's to maintain one's rights. It's to stand up for somebody when they've been wronged. So that's what she wanted. She wanted somebody to do that for her. She needed somebody to defend her, to maintain her rights, to stand up for her because she'd been wronged, not in a small way, not some petty little thing, but in a life or death situation for this woman. So if we pull this into today, I would say to you, what about you? Have you ever been wronged? Has somebody ever taken advantage of you? Have you ever been bullied? Has somebody who was more powerful than you used you? Maybe it was a parent, a coach, a teacher, a friend, a coworker, maybe some stranger. I think everybody in the room, to some degree or another, can identify with this widow. And if we thought long enough about our lives, we all have examples coming to mind of ways that we have been harmed, ways that we have not found justice. This is part of that life in the middle that we talked about last week, this gap in between Jesus has come and he's inaugurated his kingdom, so we get to experience a level of being under the rule and the compassionate reign of a good king, and yet we live in a world that's not yet fixed, that's not yet restored, that's not the way it's supposed to be. And that will only happen when Jesus returns. And so we're stuck in the middle, right? And part of the reality of being caught or stuck in the middle, living in the gap, is that we will be harmed, that there will be times where it's seeming as though we're not receiving justice. So bad, evil, harmful, it's not supposed to be this way, stuff happens to all of us. None of us are immune. How do you handle that? How have you handled that? That, perhaps more than anything else in your life, will communicate to you what your character is really like. Now, Jesus is going to tell us something of what he would like us to do in just a moment. But before we get there, I think something we have to point out is that we're not just the victims. Okay? We're not just the widow in the story. Who else are we? We're also the judge. You and I have been that judge. We're all sinners. We've all taken advantage of, hurt, not acted justly towards others. Intentionally or unintentionally, this is something we all have done. To some degree, each of us have people who, if they were sitting here today, would be thinking about us. That's sobering, isn't it? So, don't get all pitiful on me or high and mighty, because yes, we've been the widow, but yes, we've also been the judge. So I hope you'll hear that through both lenses today. So what does this woman want? She wants justice. She wants her land back that was taken from her illegally. And she's willing to drive this judge absolutely bonkers to get it. Let me show you that. Verse 4. For a while, this is the judge, he refused. But afterwards, he said to himself, though I neither fear God nor respect man, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will give her justice, so that she will not beat me down by her continual coming. That's a lovely man, isn't it? So what's the outcome of the situation? She got what she wanted, right? It's wonderful. In this life or death situation, this woman persisted enough that she got the very thing that was right, the very thing that was needed. Now she could survive. That's what was at stake here. But why? Why did this widow get that? She was persistent. She was stubborn. She was nagging. And this wicked judge, literally what he said was, I don't want her to black my eye. Now, he's not talking physically. He's saying, I don't want her to beat me down emotionally. So I'm just going to give her what she wants so she'll leave me alone. Go, widow! Right? That's awesome. Now, what in the world does this have to do with anything spiritual? Why is this in the Bible? I mean, in a relatively short book, why would this be in there? It's kind of weird, isn't it? Well, Jesus told this story because he wants us to do something. That was the reason he said it. And what he said about what he wants us to do is pretty fascinating. Look up at verse 1. He told them, this is his disciples, he told them a parable to the effect that they ought always to pray and not lose heart. So Jesus' point in this story is that we must prevail as Christians in faith-filled, persistent, passionate prayer. So persist, persist, persist. Never give up. Keep coming to God in prayer over and over and over. That's Jesus' point. Now, how did he connect that with this story? How do those two things go together? Well, I think that's still not entirely clear. So jump down with me to verse 6. And the Lord said, hear what the unrighteous judge said. And will not God give justice to his elect, who cry out to him day and night? Will he delay long over them? I tell you, he will give them justice speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth? So here is the argument that Jesus makes. If an unholy, arrogant, selfish, compassionless judge can be persuaded by the persistence of a widow, how much more will a perfect, loving, righteous, compassionate, sacrificial God of the universe take care of his people? It's a common Jewish way of saying, God's not like this thing. And if that thing is this way, then how much more is God going to be like this towards his people? Isn't that beautiful? Now, there's a little phrase in there that I think deserves some specific mention today. In verse 7, he says, will not God give justice to his elect? Now, we had our first Wednesday, this last Wednesday. If you missed it, then you can jump on iTunes or our website and get that discussion. We talked about homosexuality. That was the most common question that you raised for us. And in a month, we're going to talk about fear. That was another really common one. Lord willing, the month after that, we're going to talk about an issue that you brought up multiple times. And that's a question of a doctrine that's taught all through the Bible called predestination or election. So we're going to spend a whole evening on that topic. But just for today, I want to mention and point out the way Jesus uses this. Look again at verse 7. He says, and will not God give justice to his elect, who cry out to him day and night? Will he delay long over them? I tell you, he will give justice to them speedily. Notice the way Jesus uses that doctrine, that teaching. He says, in essence, rest assured, God is in your corner. He's got your back. He's on your side. Have the confident expectation that he's coming to your aid. Don't give up. Keep praying. He's for you. Do you believe that? That God is on your side. That he's in your corner. That he's for you. That he's for us. That when he sees us, he sees the apple of his eye. That's what Jesus is driving at, using that word. Now, if you're a Christian, why or how is that true about you? Well, ultimately, it's not because you're a good person. Because the fact is, I'm not and you're not. It's not because you've done a lot of nice things for God. It's not because you've impressed Him. It's not because you have this great, impeccable character. It's not because even you woke up one day and you decided in and of yourself that the gospel made sense. Scripture tells us we can't do that on our own. Ultimately, it's because God chose you to be His child, to be a part of His people. And He's radically for His kids. So, yes, you had to willfully, intentionally, personally, individually decide, I'm going to follow God. But ultimately, you have the means to do that because God chose you. He initiated that and enabled it. Now, I've been on both sides of the coin in my thinking about that. Early on in my ministry, I didn't believe any of that. I thought that was junk, heresy, false, and taught against it. The problem was then I began actually reading the Bible and letting it confront me and my own thoughts. And now I see that the way Jesus uses this teaching is so comforting. That's actually the way it's used many times in the Bible. It means that God's love for us and God's justice for us on our behalf isn't ultimately tied up in us, but it's tied up in Him, in His character, in His goodness, in His plan. So because we have this assurance from God that God hears our prayers, that ultimately that's up to Him, that He cares for us, that He promises to give us justice, therefore, Jesus tells us, persist in prayer. Seek God long and hard. Be faithful, consistent, and hope-filled in your prayer. Why? Because you can be fully confident that God is for His people, that God will bring justice. He does that many times in part now, and He will one day do that fully, completely, when Jesus returns. You see, and I think the vast majority of us do not get this. And if we have heard it, then we don't really believe it. The world, the earth, the universe, is inherently just. It's not running out of control. You know that? There is a God who, because He created everything and is in charge of everything, and is inherently just in and of Himself, that the world is that way. Now, yes, we live again in this gap where things are not as they should be. But ultimately, every sin ever committed against you, every act of injustice ever against you, every harm that's ever been accomplished against you will be set right. It will either be met in the justice at the cross, or it will be met in the justice at the judgment when Jesus returns. One or the other. Nothing goes unnoticed, undisciplined, undealt with. Absolutely nothing. So that ought to bring great comfort, right? Are you still awake? It also ought to cause us to be quick to repent ourselves when we harm others. It's a two-way street. You've been the widow and the judge. So this means, which I'll talk about in a little bit, we don't have to take up our own revenge. We can trust that God, in a just world, is going to take care of us. So you will be vindicated by a just God. We don't have a capricious judge. We have a loving, compassionate Heavenly Father. So pray. That's what Jesus is saying. Keep praying about something until you get an answer. I think God will tell us yes, no, later, or I've got something far better for you. And until you get one of those, the message is, be like that nagging widow. Persist. Make it life or death. Pray. Take it to God. Don't give up. Now, I think that very act of having to persist in prayer like that, even when it looks like what we think we need or what justice is, isn't happening. The very act of praying in that way will be a tool that God uses to increase your faith. Let me read you a quote from St. Augustine, who many people regard outside of the Apostle Paul as the greatest theologian that's ever lived. Here's what he says about this text. Faith pours out prayer. And the pouring out of prayer obtains the strengthening of our faith. Faith, I say, pours out prayer. The pouring out of prayer obtains strengthening even for faith itself. So in other words, as we do this very thing, as we're obedient in prayer, God will use that to strengthen and encourage and give your faith the hard rock it needs to stand on when you've been harmed. So some of you today may have already given up on something. You no longer pray about it. You've decided that doesn't work. Maybe that's your attitude towards prayer in general, as a whole. It just is not useful. It doesn't accomplish anything. And you're longing for justice. Maybe you have a grown child who's still not become a Christian. Maybe your health is in decline. Maybe you've been abused, one of the greatest acts of evil that can take place. Maybe despite all your longing and praying and talking, your spouse shows no appearance of change. Maybe you have a boss that's continuing to take advantage of you. Maybe you've got a friend that you've tried to reconcile with, or even an extended family member that way. Maybe you've tried a half a dozen times to get into that program at school that you think you've really earned. Maybe there's a crime that's been perpetuated against you that's never been resolved. The list could go on and on and on and on and on, right? We're endlessly creative in the ways we harm each other. The possibilities are endless. But Jesus would say to you today, don't give up. Persist in prayer. Be faithful, passionate, hope-filled, confident as you take those matters to God in prayer. Because He's not like that evil, selfish judge. Ultimately, we're promised justice. That's good news, right? Now, how do you apply this in the raw, real, actual stuff of daily life? I think that's a tough question. That's a hard question. How does a Christian think about the evils perpetrated against them? What does justice actually mean? We've given a definition, but in the where the rubber meets the road, what does that look like? I mean, are we to pray evil on one another? Is that what Jesus is saying? Well, about 200 years before Jesus said this story, before he spoke this parable, there was a document written called Ben Sirach, or Ecclesiasticus. Not Ecclesiastics, but Ecclesiasticus. You may have heard of this. It's not a biblical text, but it is an ancient text that is interesting and helpful. There's a passage in that book that is in many ways similar to this parable. And I want to read it to you. And it gives us something to kind of dance with and talk about. Okay? This comes from Ben Sirach, chapter 35, verse 14 through 18. He, this is speaking of God, He will not ignore the supplication of the fatherless, nor the widow when she pours out her story. Do not the tears of the widow run down her cheek as she cries out against Him who caused them to fall. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? He whose service is pleasing to the Lord will be accepted, and his prayer will reach the clouds. The prayer of the humble pierces the clouds. And he will not be consoled until it reaches the Lord. He will not desist until the Most High visits him and does justice for the righteous and executes judgment. The Lord will not delay. Sounds familiar. He will be patient with them till he crushes the genitals of the unmerciful. Bet you were not expecting to hear that today. And repays vengeance to the Gentiles. Okay, so there's a lot of similarities there, right? Widow, harm, seeking injustice. God hears. He will not delay. He will give justice. He will respond. But there's two major differences. What are they? What did you hear? What's different? Seek justice in what? Seek justice under God's law.
Okay? What else?
That's vengeful, isn't it? So, the first major difference is that passage very clearly says, if you do this, then God will do this for you. Now, that sounds like American Christianity, right? Which is horrible. Because not only is it wrong and untrue, it's really anti-gospel. The gospel is Jesus did for you what you cannot do for yourself. And you merely receive that and then live out the implications of it. That's the gospel. So the first major problem is that's anti-gospel. The second is it's full of vengeance. It's full of, because he or she hurt me, I want to see them hurt back. It's not, I want the situation to be rectified. It's, I want what evil was done to me to be done to somebody else. Now, that is also anti-gospel, anti-Bible. Jesus says that we're to forgive as we've been forgiven. Paul tells us to deal with these kinds of situations like this. Romans 12. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave room for the wrath of God. As it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, says the Lord. So, God says, I will set things right. Now, that doesn't mean it's like it never happened. Things don't work that way. If that's what you're desiring to see happen, you've got your head in the clouds. That's not the way things work. But God says, I will restore you. I will give justice. So what do we do? What's our part? Verse 20. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. For by doing so, you will heap burning coals on his head. Ouch. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Ultimately, what should be our attitude? Our worldview towards those who harm us. It's not, I want to see the same harm done to me done to them. It's ultimately, yes, I want justice. I want this rectified. I want this fixed. But Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Now, how in the world does that happen? How can you who have been sinned against, who have been harmed, who have been hurt, who have done something wrong to you, treat somebody else like that? How does that happen? Is that humanly possible? I don't think so. I think that's only possible as you see how God has forgiven you. That your whole orientation towards life changes. And you hope that God will forgive them like you've been forgiven. But you might say, but I didn't do this, and I didn't do that, and I'm not like them. But don't compare yourself to the other person. The standard is God and His holiness, not each other. We can always find somebody worse than us, right? Some of you are wondering about the person sitting next to you. But yes, you can. So how is it that we can possibly forgive the way God's forgiven us? It's only by resting in, living in the gospel. Being aware of the fact of how much we've been forgiven. That's the only way it can work. And by taking those things to God in prayer, persisting in prayer, trusting God to fix it and make things right, but with the ultimate hope that for that person, that justice will be met at the cross, not at the judgment. Because if you want it there, then I think what you're after is revenge. And what really we should be after is justice, holiness, love, truth. Right? Now, I recognize that this dredges up all kinds of stuff for people. And I hope that you'll apply this by actually doing what we're saying. And that's taking it to God in prayer And man, for me, it's pretty raw right now. All the stuff I told you last week about my extended family, my brother and sister, my brother and sister-in-law, you know, she's 6-7 weeks out from having a horrific crime committed against her. So how does that look in that situation? How do we think about that? Okay, they've caught the guy. He's in prison. He hasn't stood trial. He hasn't entered a plea. How should they think about him? Okay, this man, a neighbor, hunted them down, broke into their home, raped her, and left her. What does justice look like in that situation? Well, it's not, I want what was done to me to be done to him. Right? That's not justice. That won't do anything. That doesn't somehow take back the effect of his acts upon her, right? So it's really foolish the way we look at it. That won't fix it. So what does justice look like? Well, is it wrong for her to testify in court? To fill out victims' statements? They've sent them to us. They want us to fill those out. To say, how has this crime affected you? In hopes that that would make his sentence worse. Is that wrong? Is that seeking revenge? What do you think? I don't think so, because we're not saying, do to him what he did to her. We're saying, abide by the law of the land. And earlier in Romans, Paul said, the state carries the power of the sword, and it's a power given to them by God. That's one of the ways God establishes justice. But ultimately, what should my prayer be for that man? Not God smite him. Not God send him to hell. Not God, as he's in prison, let that be done to him. But God, even forgive him. So I hope that you will look at life through that lens. Always remembering, I have messed up. I have hurt people. I have done evil. Maybe not the same thing, but that's not the point. The point is, we've been both widow and judge, and there is inherent justice in the world. So you're going to both receive and give. And I hope that our attitude in all of this can be that of love. So what does Jesus want us to do as a response to this seemingly odd story of a widow nagging a judge to the point he says, I don't want a black eye? What do you want us to do? He wants us to persist in prayer and never give up. Constantly come to him. And yet have this attitude of love and forgiveness and hope. How do you do that? You do it by resting, trusting in Jesus. And we've blocked out some time today to take a few minutes and actually do that together. So I don't know what your prayer life is like. This is one of those topics that you can inherently make people feel guilty about. Because none of us in here would say, I got that covered. Right? There's always the sense of I could do better in prayer. And that's not a works thing. I want God to love me. I think it's just the sense that I could always improve in this area. So we're going to take several minutes and give you some time to pray. To pray individually. To, if you've got somebody next to you you want to pray with them. And then we'll pray collectively. Now, pray about what? Well, I think you could pray about two things. One, what are those things that have been done against you that you're carrying around, that you're not praying about, that you're not taking to God? Take them to him. Be passionate. Be persistent. Seek justice. But in that, pray for that person who's harmed you to be forgiven by God. That's gospel praying. And second, who have you been the judge towards? What issue is in your life that you've not corrected? that you've not gone back and said, I'm sorry, that you've not sought to put right? Is there anything like that? Ask God that. I think He'll be faithful to bring it to mind. And then I would go even further and encourage you in your praying to listen to God and to say, I will make that right. I will be humble. I will try to rectify and fix the situation.